Well, I hope you have a Bible today. You can open to Nehemiah chapter 2, page 481 still from last week. Same page. And after Ezra, if you get the Psalms and all that, you've gone too far. So that's that. Before we dive in, I want to remind you or inform you that if you drove up today and you saw a bunch of political signs out in the front of our 209 building, we're not promoting candidates, but we are a voting site here at First Baptist in the 209. And many of you know that I have an undergraduate degree in political science, and so you need to vote. You should be a registered voter, and you need to vote because otherwise you let other people determine what happens in your community, state, and nation. Not you. So do that. If you're in Friendswood, there's a city election. If you're in Galveston County, there's drainage districts, issues, school board things, probably for everybody around here because our area is exploding. And so all those kinds of things, get out and vote. And if you live in Galveston County, you can vote the 209 early here. So that's my public service announcement for the day. We are in Book of Nehemiah, and in chapter 2, we're now 4 months past chapter 1. So chapter 1 happens, 4 months pass, and then we get to chapter 2. And Nehemiah is about to have an important encounter with the king. I don't know if you've ever had one of those important meetings that you had to gear up for. Well, Nehemiah wasn't gearing up for an important meeting because this was kind of a spur-of-the-moment thing. It happened in the moment, but he was ready. He was ready in the moment to respond accordingly to an interaction with his boss, the king. And so look with me at Nehemiah chapter 2, verse 1. It says, in the month of Nisan, I tried to adjust the pack, and I hit the button. Okay, start over. Chapter 2. In the month of Nisan, in the 20th year of King Artaxerxes, when wine was before him, I took up the wine and gave it to the king. Now, I had not been sad in his presence. And the king said to me, why is your face sad, seeing you are not sick? This is nothing but sadness of the heart. Then I was very much afraid. I said to the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my face be sad when the city, the place of my father's graves, lies in ruin and its gates have been destroyed by fire? Then the king said to me, what are you requesting? So I prayed to the God of heaven, and I said to the king, if it pleases the king and if your servant has found favor in your sight, that you send me to Judah, to the city of my father's graves, that I may rebuild it. And the king said to me, with the queen sitting beside him, how long will you be gone, and when will you return? So it pleased the king to send me when I had given him a time. And I said to the king, if it pleases the king, let letters be given me to the governors of the province beyond the river, that they may let me pass through until I come to Judah. And a letter to Asaph, the keeper of the king's forest, that he may give me timber to make the beams for the gates of the fortress of the temple and for the wall of the city and for the house that I shall occupy. And the king granted me what I asked, for the good hand of my God was upon me. This is an amazing interaction between a servant and the most powerful person in the world. It's an amazing interaction, and it gives us a great model, perhaps, for how you and I should live, a great model for how we should approach significant things in our lives and the lives of our community. And I want to share with you just a few kind of big things that Nehemiah models here that we can take as characteristics, perhaps, for our own life. The first thing that he models is a deep burden, and not just a selfish burden, not just something that he allows him to get ahead, but a burden for his people, a burden for his community, a burden for his town, his city. Nehemiah here 4 months after he's been given the news that the city is still in ruin, he finally lets his emotions show. 4 months, he lets his emotions show. He had kept it in, and he held it in, and he didn't sort of project to the king any sadness or discouragement until this moment. And he's handing the king his glass of wine, and the king notices his face is sort of downcast. And he questions Nehemiah about it. Because for Nehemiah to be sad in this moment was potentially dangerous for Nehemiah. Most of us, if we walk into our office and we're a little discouraged or a little down and a coworker or supervisor asks us what's going on, you're probably not going to be terminated because of your answer. But in this case, ancient kings and rulers were pretty paranoid. And so Artaxerxes might have thought that Nehemiah was dissatisfied with his position, with his job, and therefore dissatisfied with Artaxerxes. And ancient Persia was a lot like Texas, an at-will employment area. And so it could have been that Artaxerxes took that the wrong way, and Nehemiah was now out of a job, and not just out of a job, probably out of life. Probably the end of Nehemiah's life if Artaxerxes was dissatisfied with him. So this was potentially a dangerous moment here for Nehemiah. The other option is Artaxerxes could have thought that perhaps there was some plot against Artaxerxes, and Nehemiah found out about it and wasn't sure how to deal with it. And so the emotion on his face couldn't be hidden. So perhaps Artaxerxes should be worried about his own life, right? He's about to take a glass of wine from his cupbearer who looks sad, right? You put the pieces together and you're already a little paranoid. You never know what might happen. And so this is a strange, unique, potentially dangerous moment. And so when King Artaxerxes asks him, "Why is your face sad? You're not sick." The next line there is an important line. "I was afraid, very much afraid." All of a sudden, it became a reality for Nehemiah that this is a precarious situation for me, that this could end badly if I don't handle this right. But his burden was so great. His burden was so great that he had to respond. I don't know if you've ever been afraid in a moment. Like, Nehemiah is afraid. I don't know if you've ever been really afraid in a moment. Not like you're going down a dark alley at night. You should be afraid. Like those kind of moments. I remember a time almost 20 years ago when I was going through a bunch of side streets in a foreign country. And I was like, "We're probably going to die." We were looking for knockoff watches. Like fake Rolexes and stuff. So not that kind of afraid. Like afraid when you have something so deep and so meaningful and so powerful and like so big. You're like, I don't know how this is going to go. I'm afraid it's not going to go right. And if it doesn't, I'll be destroyed. Emotionally, spiritually. That's that kind of moment. And so Nehemiah is a little afraid right here. Because it's not just that King Artaxerxes has the power to potentially not just say you're fired, but hey, to the death you go. It was Artaxerxes who actually stopped the rebuilding of the wall in Jerusalem. It was his decree. They had started rebuilding the temple, and Artaxerxes stopped it. I mean, not rebuilding the temple. That was already done. Rebuilding the wall. And so in this moment, there's a lot at stake. But the burden that Nehemiah had for his people, for his community, for God's name, for the glory of God's name, he couldn't help but speak in that moment and answer the king. And so I wonder, as you think about your own circle of influence, as you think about your own station in life, whether you're close to the king or not. Do you have God-centered burdens that just can't be held in? Is there something in your life that you're so burdened for the glory of God's name, for the people in your life that are broken and hurting, for the people in our community that need restoration and wholeness? And these might be huge, big, like gigantic burdens, or they might be very specific. You may or may not know that within a 5-mile radius of 209 South Friendswood Drive, which is at the block right there, there are 133,000 people living within a 5-mile radius. I barely make the cut on the south side of Friendswood, my favorite place, the south side. Some of you, you live in Pearland, you live closer than me, and I live in Friendswood. You live closer to me because you live just about a mile that way. But within a 5-mile radius, we have 133,000 people. What if we were so burdened for just 1% of that number? What if? For you math majors, that's 1,300 people. That's probably a small burden. 10% is probably the right burden, 13,000 people. Do we have those kind of big God-sized burdens that 1% of the people that live within 5 miles of us would be impacted by our gospel witness, by our witness of the good news, by our ministry, our efforts, and that they would find a place of restoration, wholeness. They would find family. They would find connection. They would find a place to worship and serve, find a place to experience eternity today, by putting their faith in Christ, like huge God-centered burdens. Or maybe you have a very specific burden. There's someone in your sphere of influence that is far from God, that is hurting and broken, and they need Jesus in a mighty way. And you're burdened for them. Or maybe they know Jesus, but they've made a train wreck of their life. We all have some of those people in our life where they know Jesus, but they just make terrible decisions all the time. We burden to step alongside them and not just like, you've made your bed, lie in it. No. That's the kind of burden that Nehemiah has, that it would be a God-centered burden for his name's sake, for his people, for the people of God, the covenant people. You have a God-centered burden. Because guess what? King Artaxerxes is not thinking about Nehemiah's burden. King Artaxerxes is not even thinking about Jerusalem. He's not thinking about Jerusalem. Who's thinking about Jerusalem? Only Nehemiah. And most of the people that you and I come in contact with in our community, in our sphere of influence, they're not thinking about Jesus. They're not thinking about First Baptist Friendswood. They're not thinking about any church. It's not even on their radar. And so they don't have the same burden because they're just not even thinking about it. But God has put you in their place to help them think about things of eternity. God put Nehemiah in this place of important position to be able to speak to the one person on earth who could make it happen. And because Artaxerxes is not thinking about Jerusalem, Nehemiah introduces the subject to him. Now, he does so very carefully with great respect. So King Artaxerxes says, Nehemiah, why such the long face? You're not sick. Like, that's code word for nothing better be up, buddy, or you're in big trouble. He says, long live the king. Let the king live forever. Like, hey, let's get it on track. I'm on your team, king. We're together. I'm with you. He honors the king in that moment. But then he speaks very truthfully. But he does so in a wise way. He doesn't mention Jerusalem. Because Jerusalem was probably a politically sensitive location for the king. That was probably a politically sensitive topic in that era. And instead, what he does is he mentions his hometown, the graves of his ancestors, and how his community has been broken down. Now remember, it took 70 years to rebuild the temple, and now this is 70 years after that. The temple got rebuilt in 515, and this is about 445 BC. So we're 70 years after the temple's been rebuilt. The walls are still kind of a mess. And here he's asking to repair the city. So he focuses on his personal connection. And there's a beautiful, very brief statement in here that gives us the second piece of Nehemiah's characteristics that we need to model. He says in verse 4, "What are you requesting?" So Nehemiah makes this pitch, and Artaxerxes says, "Well, what do you want exactly?" And then Nehemiah says, "So I prayed to the God of heaven." Nehemiah modeled not just prayer, but constant prayer. Because remember, this is 4 months after he learned of what was happening. 4 months. So for 4 months, he's been praying. We learned that last week. Praying and fasting, seeking God, asking God. So for 4 months, he's been praying. And then even in this moment, he goes again. Instead of responding quickly, he goes and does a little sort of a breath prayer. It's why I joke all the time when we go out to eat, people say, "Will you pray?" And I pray without ceasing. 1 Thessalonians 5:18. You've memorized a verse right now. Like, because we should have a constant lifestyle of prayer. Pray without ceasing, without stopping. That's what Nehemiah modeled, this constant lifestyle of prayer. Because in that moment between the question, "What do you want, Nehemiah?" and the answer, he prays, he paused, he sought the Lord. But that wasn't just in that moment. He had been praying for 4 months up to that. And in the decisive moment, in the moment that really counted, he instinctively turned to God. His instinct wasn't to shoot off a cool answer or to ask for the moon. No, instinctively he went to the Lord in the moment when it really mattered. Do you instinctively go to God during important moments? Is that your natural tendency? Is to turn to God and say, "Lord, give me wisdom, grace. Help me say the right thing in the right way at the right time. Help me to know to choose left or right or straight." Instinctively, he knew that he needed to go to God because God was going to give him the words to say in that moment so he could respond appropriately to Artaxerxes. But the beauty of that 4 months leading up to this moment wasn't just an opportunity for Nehemiah to pray and to seek the Lord. It also gave him an opportunity to plan carefully. That's another characteristic that you and I probably need to learn from Nehemiah, that he was a careful planner. And we're going to see that developed all throughout the rest of the book. He was a careful planner. He took the time to devote himself to what needed to happen, how it needed to happen. 4 months he spent, 4 months praying, planning, thinking. I wonder how often do we think about praying for the lives in our circle of influence that need to be restored? How often are we praying for the people in our circle of influence that are broken and hurting? And then how often are we actually planning, okay, how can I adjust my schedule? How can I create opportunities to connect with people who are hurting and broken, who need encouragement, who need hope? How often are you praying and planning on how you as a person, can make a difference in God's kingdom? How often are you praying and planning for that? My fear is that we spend a lot of time planning our kingdom efforts, my kingdom. I'm going on vacation in a few weeks. We've spent a lot of hours planning that vacation. A lot of hours. And it's a place I've been to more than 50 times. And I still spent a lot of time planning, coordinating, back and forth. How often are we praying and planning for things that matter for eternity? That's what Nehemiah is doing here. Like, this is changing the trajectory of an entire nation. and he wants to get it right. And so he spends those 4 months praying and planning. And that praying and planning, those thoughts actually turn to action. Sometimes we have lots of thoughts and lots of ideas, and we never actually make anything happen. We talk it to death, and nothing ever gets done. Nehemiah made it happen. A great model for us to be courageous in our activity, to be courageous in our action. Because when the king asked him, "What are you requesting?" he says that brief prayer, and then he gives him a very, very specific list of things that he wants. Very specific. He goes, "I need you to send me to Judah." That's a specific location. I need to go there. That's where I need to go. "And oh, by the way, here are the other things I need. I need time off." He asked for time off, and the king said, "How long?" We don't know exactly at this moment, but whatever the answer was, it was good. And the king said, "Okay, you can be gone that long." And then he asked for authority. "King, I need you to write some letters to send with me." In our day, it would be, "Hey, can you send some emails to so-and-so and so-and-so beyond the river that when I get there, they're going to let me through. And we're going to have a good passage all the way to Judah." Like, authority on your behalf to get me to where I'm going. And then he asked for resources. This is the crazy one. This is the wild one. This is the God-sized vision. He says, "King, I need you to write a letter to Asaph." And who is Asaph? He's the keeper of the forest. Look at the verses 5, 6, whatever in there. He's the keeper of the forest. Whose forest? The king's forest, Artaxerxes' forest. "I need you to write a letter to Asaph so that he will give me timber for the wall around the temple, the wall around the city, and my house." When someone gives you something, what do we call that? A gift. "King, I need you to pay for all the timber that I'm going to use to rebuild the city." Yes. That's how it's done, people. Courageous action. Like, I want to have a God-centered plan. I want to have a God-centered burden, but I want it to be God-sized also. That Nehemiah is asking for something significant here. And his preparation was evident. He knew what he wanted. He knew what he wanted. Because God had shown him over these 4 months. He didn't go into that meeting half-baked. We do a lot of things in our lives half-baked. The younger we are, maybe a third baked. Right? The older we are, hopefully we get a little better at that. But I wonder, are we thinking about things in such a way that God could do something extraordinary? Like have the king of another nation pay to rebuild our city when he's the one that stopped construction in the first place. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. What would happen if you prayed about the people in your life that need restoration, that need rebuilding, that need to be revived? They're dead because of their sin, and they need to be brought to life through Christ. What would happen? Are you courageous in your action? And then finally, do you have this sense that it wasn't you and all your wisdom and glory? Now, the last characteristic that Nehemiah models is he had this God-centered trust. At the very end of this little section, he says, "The king granted me what I asked, not because I was eloquent, not because I was well-prepared, not because the wine was good." That's none of those answers. "Because the good hand of my God was upon me." He trusted in the Lord, and he knew, Proverbs 21, that it was the Lord who rules, who is sovereign over rulers and nations. It's God who is in charge. It's God who knows. It's God who orchestrates these things. And so the final question for us to kind of think through is, do we trust God? no matter the circumstance. We trust God even in those moments when we're not sure of the outcome, or maybe the outcome doesn't happen the way we want. This was an amazing outcome, an unbelievable outcome. Nehemiah got everything he wanted, and the king covered the cost. That's unreal. And sometimes that's the way it works out. And other times, it's like we're over there ourselves with our axe chopping the tree down. Right? Either way, God gets the glory. Either way, do we praise him? Do we trust him? Do we know that he is the one in charge of all things? Because as we look at this book of Nehemiah, we look at the person of Nehemiah. Nehemiah is one of those people in the Old Testament that points us to Jesus. He points us to the person of Christ. He's an Old Testament figure that helps give us a little foreshadowing of who Jesus is. Because you think about it, Nehemiah was a servant. He was a servant of the king. Our Savior Jesus came lowly as a servant of the king. He came to broken people. And Jesus restored men and women to himself. That's Nehemiah. Nehemiah, servant of the king, is going to restore the brokenness of his community, pointing us to the greatest servant, Jesus. And we have the joy today of looking back and seeing that it's not about the wall. It's not about protecting. It's about restoring the lives of his countrymen. It's about restoring the lives of people. It's about them being the covenant people God has called them to. And that's the same opportunity you and I have, is to help people, to reach people, to be restored, to be reconciled to God, to make their lives whole when they're broken. Not just repaired and super glued, no, put to back together whole, raised from death to life. And so my question for you today as we close is, where is God calling you to pray? A lot like last week. Where is God calling you to pray and seek that he would give you a God-centered burden for something in your life that's beyond you, that's for our community? How is God moving you to plan how you might make a kingdom-sized difference in your sphere of influence? How is he calling you to act for his glory and not your own? How are you doing that? I want to invite you to pray with me today. And our time of response this morning is going to be just that. An opportunity for you to seek the Lord, to determine how you might find a God-centered, God-sized burden that you can lean into to make a difference for our community. I do pray that God would use us to make a difference in, even if it's just 1% of our community, 10%. What if 50%? What if the 15 churches in Friendswood, just in Friendswood, like we have churches, banks, and med spas. I'm so thankful for all those in Friendswood. What if we all got together and like made a huge difference for the kingdom? Like, that's the kind of thing that God wants, like this courageous action. What courageous action is he calling you to? I want to invite you to pray about that this morning. Will you bow with me?